Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. Hey, everyone, and welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast. I'm your host, John Durante, and thank you so much for joining me today. Today's episode is a little different from the usual. Recently, I had a chance to be interviewed on another podcast called College and Career Clarity with Lisa Marco Robbins. We covered a lot of ground discussing what I've learned after interviewing over 200 college admissions representatives from schools of all types. And I'm excited to share the conversation with you today because it really captures some of the most important takeaways from speaking with so many experts in the field of college admissions. One of the great things about being part of the podcasting community is that longtime podcasters don't see each other as competitors. Instead, we help each other out by sharing knowledge and collaborating all the time. Since podcasts are on demand, listeners can tune in whenever it's convenient for them. So in that spirit, I'm happy to share this episode from College and Career Clarity with Lisa Marco Robbins on my podcast. As I continue to learn from my amazing guests, I also enjoy sharing these insights in person with parent groups, school organizations, and at community events. So if you're part of a PTA or any group looking for a speaker to discuss the college admissions process in more depth, I'd love to talk to you about how I can help. I really enjoy connecting with new audiences and offering practical advice that can make a difference. But for now, let's dive into this special episode where I get to be in the hot seat and reflect on all the incredible wisdom shared by college admissions experts over the years. Thank you. Enjoy the show.
There are a lot of people that have that feel that you just said in terms of admissions reps being inaccessible. I experienced the total opposite as a parent. And it was very stressful for me and my daughter, which is why I, again, came up with the podcast idea. And so many of them, just about all of them, mention reach out, reach out, reach out. Now, if you're going to reach out, don't reach out to ask a question like, what's your mid 50%, right? Don't reach out to ask anything that's easily accessible on their website. You want to be mindful of reaching out with a question where you're showing them that you put a little bit of thought into it, that you research their website. Perhaps you went on a tour and you have a follow-up question, because they always say, we are admissions representatives. We want to admit you. We want to help you. We don't want to reject you. So that is the truth. And that's something that's come up a lot in the podcast.
In today's episode, we're delving into the world of college admissions with insights from over 200 college admissions representatives. I'm thrilled to be joined by John Durante, principal of Syosset High School on Long Island, a parent of two college-age daughters, and host of the College Admissions Process podcast. His podcast was born out of navigating the college-bound journey with his daughters, and he brings a wealth of knowledge to share. On John's podcast, he's interviewed over 200 college admissions officers, and he has no plans to stop anytime soon. Through those interviews, he's gained valuable insights into the college application process and what colleges really want, emphasizing that each component of the application serves a very specific purpose and builds on the others. We'll explore how admissions officers evaluate applicants in the context of their high school's offerings, whether test optional policies are genuine, and the impact of institutional priorities on admissions decisions. John also encourages families to enjoy the process, highlighting the abundance of great college options available. Whether you're just starting the college admissions journey or looking for strategies to improve your teen's application, this episode is packed with essential insights and practical advice. I'm Lisa Marco Robbins, and I want to welcome you to College and Career Clarity, a Flourish Coaching production. Let's dive right in to a great conversation. John, welcome to the show. It is an honor to have you on.
Lisa, thank you so much for having me. And the first thing that I want to say is congratulations to you and your team on College and Career Clarity. I listened to some of your episodes and they're fantastic. So it's an honor and pleasure for me to be here with you today.
Wow. Thank you so much. You are definitely a trailblazer. You are ahead of me in our podcasting journey. And I have been an avid listener of yours for years. So right back at you. Thank you. It was interesting when I, you know, first was listening and I'm thinking, oh, John's a principal. So that's what this is, you know, born out of this podcast. But we're both parents of young adult children. Yes. And what I loved hearing that, like, really your podcast, we should tell everybody, the College Admissions Process podcast, where they can listen in all the places and everybody should subscribe and listen, but that was born out of the heart of a father, right?
That's right.
And not with your principal hat on. And first of all, I love that part of it. And so as you told me that, and, you know, and I started thinking about, like, okay, we've got the hat of a principal, the heart of a dad, and you have spoken to over 200 college admissions professionals of various roles at different schools. And I thought, okay, let's summarize the insights, because this is the guy that's getting the inside scoop. And so let's talk about it. Like, I'm going to start with, I bet you, as you're having these conversations, you're thinking, oh, yes, and I, as a dad, and the parents in my school are thinking the opposite. So what are those common things that you've learned that you're like, okay, first of all, parents, you don't have this one right. What can you correct for us?
Well, there were so many things. At first, I do want to just say that, yes, even though I'm the principal of Syosset High School here on Long Island in New York, I did decide to bring the podcast about after helping my two daughters, particularly my youngest one, who had an IEP, an individualized education plan. And the college process was not simple for us. She was not your typical student that performed well academically and everything was hunky-dory. You know, she definitely struggled. I mean, A plus for being social, no question about it. But academically, she, you know, her best years were not in high school. And so I was that parent that tried to help her. And I felt for the first time the real stress that parents feel. And ultimately, my daughter did go where she wanted to be. She's about to enter her senior year. She's doing extremely well. Last year, she told me that it was her best year academically ever, which, you know, to me felt so good. But we came about the idea of the podcast because of the work that I did with her. And the admissions reps was so amazing to me. And I would literally call and ask them, look, here's her profile. Should she even apply? And they were great, each and every one of them. And ultimately, there was a school that she applied early decision. And again, she's going to be a senior there. So because of how awesome the reps were, I decided to bring this podcast idea about, where each episode would be me interviewing an admissions rep to talk about their schools, everything that they have to offer in the classrooms and beyond, but also to give insight into their application review process. A typical question is, you say your test optional, can you share the percentage of students, not only that applied, but the percentage of students that were actually admitted that did not submit test scores? And then ultimately, every conversation ends with, what are your top three pieces of advice for students and their parents? So what have I learned after interviewing over 200 admissions reps and counting? You know, I'm having so much fun, Lisa, that I'm not stopping anytime soon. Also, because I'm getting so many people reaching out from throughout the country and even beyond, believe it or not, with just advice and questions. Many people reach out saying, hey, you haven't done XYZ college. Can you reach out to them and get them on the podcast? And anytime I get an email like that, I certainly send an invite. But one of the things that, you know, I learned, I guess, are the controllables, the things that are truly in your control, and those things that are not. So in terms of what's in your control, it's very important to look at the application as a marketing package. There are many pieces to it, and it's important to understand what it is that the admissions reps are looking for in each piece. So for example, the first thing that colleges want to know is that you can handle the work once you're on their campus. So to look at your transcript to really be a great indicator in terms of the work that you did. A typical question that parents ask is, the school down the block, they offer 20 AP courses. My school only offers 5. How is my child going to be compared to that school down the block where the kids have up to 20 AP courses to choose from? And the truth of the matter is, the admissions reps look at your transcript in the context of your high school, meaning what is offered to you? How did you challenge yourself? What are the ramps that you built over 4 years? And yes, how did you perform? And so that's the transcript, right? Obviously, that's the academic piece. And I mention also the context of your high school because there's something called the school profile. And so an admissions rep that has a particular territory for the last 20 years, they know the high schools in their territory extremely well. But new admissions reps, and even the old ones, they look at something called the school profile, which each school submits to the colleges, which is an overview of the types of courses that are available. AP, IB, are there any restrictions? They share grade distributions. They share average scores on, for example, AP tests, average SAT scores, ACT scores, and so much more. So if you're not familiar with your school's profile, I advise students to reach out to your counseling office or try to do a Google search. Oftentimes it's right on the high school website, and be familiar with it because that's what the admissions reps know about your school, and they're going to evaluate your application based on the context of your school. So in addition to wanting to make sure that you're able to perform well and you're going to be successful academically once you're on their campus, and again, the main piece that they look for is that transcript to determine that, they also want to know the kind of community member you're going to be, the kind of classmate you're going to be, the kind of roommate that you're going to be. How are you going to contribute to their great community that's already there, right? So they look at your activity sheet. The activity sheet tells them what it is that you chose to do after school, whether it was a club, maybe it's a job, maybe it's taking care of an elderly relative. And oftentimes they talk about the fact that if you hold a job or you have the responsibility of taking care of an elderly relative, that's something that's very important that you indicate, because that might be the reason why, unlike a friend who doesn't have a job, you're not in five clubs. So anything that you don't include in your application, you're leaving it up to the admissions representatives to speculate as to why. So it's very important to be mindful of that and to present yourself in each part the best that you can.
Well, I love that you brought up like the work piece, because I have a lot of families asking, you know, some think it's going to be bad if my teen hasn't had a job. Others are going to think it's going to be bad if they have had a job and not done other things. And that is probably one of the most common extracurricular questions that I get. And so, you know, we talked about in context of your school, what they offer. It sounds like it's also they're really going to give, you know, they're really going to take into consideration within context of your home and the importance of that, right?
Yes, absolutely. So what I've learned is that there's really no bad or good. The fact that you have a job, it's not bad or good, but it's important that you indicate it so that they understand that that's what you need to do. Maybe it's to help the family. Maybe you have an elderly relative that doesn't speak English. You have to help them when they go to the doctor so that you could translate for that relative. Whatever it is, you need to let the admissions reps know so that, to your point, they're evaluating you based on the context of whatever it is that your family situation is. And by the way, when you have a job as a 16-year-old, you're learning responsibility. You're learning to, you know, be there, show up, deal with a supervisor. So there's a lot of leadership skills that are learned being part of that first job. So,
well, it really goes back to, you know, as you're saying that, it's not just what are you doing, but it's within the context of the why. You know, Simon Sinek's got that great book, you know, about beginning with why. And so this is like, what is the why? What does it say about yourself? And, you know, as we're talking about things like work, I think I've seen some students make the mistake that when they go into the Common App and they're in that activity section, putting their, you know, 10 extra, up to 10 extracurriculars that they can put in, they start thinking only in context of like what they're doing at school. So what teams are they on? What clubs are they on? But this brings up the fact that it's anything that you're doing outside of the school hours, outside of the days that you're sitting in academic classes at school, those are your activities. And so it doesn't have to be a school-based club or things like that, right?
Absolutely. And it's come up in multiple episodes. The two main examples, again, are if a student has a job, it's very important that they include that. Or again, if you have to take care of a younger sibling, perhaps, you know, both parents work, you have your younger siblings, and you have to be home at 3 o'clock to get your siblings off the bus or pick them up from school or whatever it is. Again, anything that you don't share with the admissions reps, you're leaving it up to them to speculate, which is a mistake. Because if they understand, and I love the way you put it, by the way, Lisa, because we talk about they evaluate the transcript in the context of your high school. They do evaluate your activity sheet in the context of who you are, whatever your family situation may be.
You know, as you were sharing about your second daughter was a little more complicated, and mm-hmm. so you were reaching out more. First of all, I want everybody to say, like, that's not only inspirational, but aspirational, because I feel like one of the common misconceptions I hear parents say is, you know, that they're at the mercy. I think families are feeling like, I know they are feeling like they're at the mercies of the schools, and that they have, you talked about what you can control and not control. And the parents are often feeling like the control is completely within the hands of the college, and that that's not a very balanced scale. And I preach on the podcast, in my Q&As for my Launch Career Clarity course, anytime that I'm on somebody else's podcast, like, be a wise consumer. You know, mm-hmm. as parents, mm-hmm. John, you and me, I'm finished. I just finished paying for college for my youngest. Got a little bit of a pay raise there. And you're almost finished. And so it's a huge investment and expense. And so I preach all the time, like, be a wise consumer. And I think what's really a great example that you provided is, and I would say, it's not just for the kid who's not an easy one to figure out. But a myth is that these colleges are completely in control and they're inaccessible to us when we're going through the decision process, the application process. So reach out. They are there. These people are not against teenagers. They are for teenagers and their families, and they actually are accessible, but you have to be the wise consumer and reach out, whether that's email or making a phone call or having your supporting your teen and doing it. We talk a lot about having the teen take the initiative and supporting them mm-hmm. and how to do that. But just the fact that you've been able to get over 200 colleges to come on your show and talk, I think, is another demonstration of how accessible they're willing to be when it feels like, and that's a misconception, that they're inaccessible. Would you agree?
I totally agree. And that's, again, why I decided to create the podcast, because I do have the benefit of being a principal in a highly academic place. I love my community. I've been here. I just completed actually 30 years, only 14 years as the
Congrats.
Principal, but I've been here. Thank you. But I've been here my entire career. And I recognize that, you know, I actually work in a community where people are highly educated, middle class and above for the most part. And, you know, they're pro-education. But there are a lot of people that have that feel that you just said in terms of admissions reps being inaccessible. I experienced the total opposite as a parent. And it was very stressful for me and my daughter, which is why I, again, came up with the podcast idea. And so many of them, just about all of them, mention reach out, reach out, reach out. Now, if you're going to reach out, don't reach out to ask a question like, what's your mid 50%? Right. Don't reach out to ask anything that's easily accessible on their website. You want to be mindful of reaching out with a question where you're showing them that you put a little bit of thought into it, that you, you know, research their website. Perhaps you went on a tour and you have a follow-up question, because they always say, we are admissions representatives. We want to admit you. We want to help you. We don't want to reject you. So that is the truth. And that's something that's come up a lot in the podcast. So it goes back to what I was saying in the beginning in terms of what you control and what you don't control. Just to give you an example in terms of controllables, the transcript, hopefully you're starting early, basically at the beginning of high school, to understand that it represents the big piece of your academic portion of the application, obviously. The activity sheet represents what you do outside of school. It's going to give them insight in terms of the community member that you're going to be. Another piece is the essay. many times students, they basically repeat what's on the transcript or what's on the activity sheet in their essay. I love soccer. My activity sheet was full of soccer accolades. If my essay is basically only talking about the fact that I love soccer and I played throughout high school, it is a true missed opportunity. It's not adding anything new, right? So the transcript, academics, activity sheet, all of the activities, leadership, perhaps there were some awards. That's the activity sheet. The essay really needs to be, you know, and there are some schools that give an interview, but you got to look at it as it's an interview, right? Even though you're writing it, it's your voice describing who you are. And they always say, by the way, it doesn't really matter what the topic is. People lose so much time trying to develop the topic. The reality is I've heard topics about donuts, about, I mean, anything and everything, okay? But what they want is whatever topic you choose, whatever happened, explain what happened, and maybe that should be no more than 10% of it. What was your reflection? What were the questions that you asked? How did you pivot? How did it improve who you are as a person while giving insight in just that, who you are as a person and how you continue to strive to be better and how you're going to contribute once you're on whatever campus is fortunate enough to accept you? Am I making myself clear, Lisa?
You're making yourself clear. I love it. And you know what, you were just describing that, like kind of the chunks of the essay, that the rubric that needs to be in there. You really just gave us a rubric for writing a great essay, which is fantastic. But, you know, I've done this trick in the past when I used to assist students with essays. I don't anymore. And I would give them really like an excellent essay, but a really old one. Right. So you've got like Johns Hopkins, who every year publishes their favorite essays, right? Which is
a great website.
Fantastic.
By the way,
website.
Hamilton College does the same thing.
Yes,
up in
they
New
do.
York. Yep.
So
great website.
We will in the show notes link to both of those because they do. They're like, here's our favorite essays this year. And right. So it makes it a little more transparent. And it's very fitting with that rubric. Like, I think they could read it and do and apply that rubric you just gave us. But at the same time, one of the things that, like with the students, as they're thinking about this, I'll take a really old essay and then I'll say, okay, read it. And then I'll give them the current, and not, they haven't changed for several years now, obviously.
Right.
But I'll give them the current Common App prompts and I'll say, okay, you read this essay. And what they don't know is it's from like 2014. And I'll say, which one of these prompts do you think it was? And the students will say to me, Oh, I think it's number two, because there's seven of them right now. So they'll say, I think it's number two. But, you know, it could also be number five. And, well, you know, sevens write about anything you want to. And so I'll say, well, guess what? This was written in 2014. And these were not the essay prompts back in 2014. So to further reinforce what the great advice that you just gave, John, it's like, write about anything. They just want to get to know you, and it will fit one of the prompts. And by the way, number seven is basically write whatever you want to write about, right?
Absolutely. And I love that one, because if the first six, you're not sure, number seven is, hey, make one up, whatever prompt you want to talk about, whatever topic you want to talk about. And by the way, I love that you mentioned the prompts, because another thing that comes up a lot is whichever prompt you select, make sure that at the end of the essay, you actually answer the prompt. Because another thing that comes up a lot of times is that students don't answer the prompt, not only in the personal essay, but many times in a supplemental essay, which we could, you know, elaborate on, you know, a little later. And if I may, so we talked a little bit about the controllables, and there's a lot of things that are not in our control. So one question that a lot of people, you know, need to understand are the myths and realities of the college admissions process. And I had the great pleasure of meeting Jeff Salingo, who, you know, he's an author, a journalist, you know, well-written. He wrote the book, Who Gets In and Why. So I met him at a national conference down in Baltimore last year, and I had the great pleasure of having him on my podcast. And I love what Jeff said in terms of just that, you know, what are the myths? And he talked about controllables and the non-controllables. And the fact is that he said, everyone thinks that the college admissions process is about the kids. And to a certain extent, it is. But he said, what people really need to realize is that it's absolutely about the institutions. At the end of the day, they have their institutional priorities. And so, for example, institutional priority number one is, what is the freshman class? What is the number of the freshman class that they're looking to admit? I just recently interviewed a school that is on the smaller side. They receive 29,000 applications. This is a very competitive school, by the way. 29,000 applications, and their institutional priority is to accept a freshman class of 2,600. And if you look at those numbers, proportionately, any school could fit into that. You know, there are schools like NYU that receives well over 100,000 applications, but proportionately speaking, it's the same thing. These schools are receiving far more applications than ever, again, because of the test optional nature of the application process, the fact that the common application has really streamlined the process in terms of, you know, it's so easy, Lisa, as you know, to apply to 10 schools, 12 yeah. schools with one application, as opposed to, frankly, when you and I were in college, where we were bubbling in with pencil, you know, the circles, and the kids right now are saying, what are you talking about? But, you know, it's definitely a lot more streamlined.
Well, as you were saying that, I had Andy Borst when he was at, he's at Georgia now in enrollment, yep. but he, when he was director,
I interviewed Andy
oh,
was
okay.
on.
Okay. He's been on my podcast too.
He's awesome.
So generous and so yes. transparent. Like,
he was great.
He amazes me. But to your point of giving those numbers, we were talking about admission by major, which UIUC is a direct admit to major. And we've done a deep dive study on the 50 state flagships on this particular topic. But he was saying, you know, for impacted majors, which are those majors that are the most popular or in demand, whether that's universally or by particular campus, you know, he shared that for computer science, which for them is only at UIUC was only a 6% admit rate, where the university overall was closer to 50%. Mm-hmm. He made the point of, there's so many good kids. We could fill with kids who could be successful in that major. We could fill many freshman classes over and over and over and over. And so that fits into the, like, that is not something that you can influence or control. There's many yeah. great kids getting rejected. It's not personal, but it's still going to feel personal.
It definitely is going to still feel personal. And that's another question that comes up often. It's about the first, let's say, 20% of the students that get rejected, right? If you could ever determine who those kids are, how different would their profiles be compared to the students that were actually admitted? And the answer is not very different at all. You know, there are schools where I remember years ago at a faculty meeting, a representative from Yale University actually spoke to my faculty about writing a college recommendation letter, speaking to, you know, high school teachers. And what he said was, A plus average, perfect SAT score, captain of the soccer team, president of the senior class. He said, in general, for a school like Yale University, that's pretty much the profile of everyone that we get.
Yeah.
And so what we look for is what he said is, we need to know from you, teachers, when you write about them, you know, if this is a kid that when they enter the room, they light it up, we need to know about it. If this is a kid that when you plan your lessons, you have to consider your questioning and your follow-up questions because you know that Lisa in your class is going to challenge you, we need to know that in the letter, right? And it goes back to what I was saying earlier about each piece has to build upon the next, including, by the way, teacher's letter of recommendations. Because if a teacher writes a letter, again, just regurgitating what's on the transcript or the activity sheet, missed opportunity. Big missed opportunity. But getting back to your point, it's true that many of the reps reported that, yes, if you could determine who that first 30% that got rejected, in many cases, their profiles are very similar to the students that got accepted.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, we had a previous entire episode around institutional priorities. What are they? How do you determine what they are? So I'm going to link to it in the show notes.
Great.
Because it's a complicated topic, but if you really are making this time and the space to do your homework, you can figure out what a school's, you know, top institutional priorities are. And it could just be that, I remember a long time ago, this is way before COVID, somebody from Oregon reached out to me, you know, here I am in Cincinnati, Ohio, right? And mm-hmm. they said, we have and they didn't use the word institutional priorities, but they just said, we're making an initiative to get more students from your state. And as I'm doing my research, and back then, you know, you and I both were not podcasting back. This was so long ago. We probably weren't even thinking about it yet. But I had a blog, and this is with a previous company that I own that did academic support and test prep and IEC work. And she said, every time I'm like Googling stuff, you know, Ohio, Cincinnati, she said, your name keeps coming up, things that you've spoken at, blogs that you've written. And she said, do you know of any local college fairs that you could connect me with? So that was an institutional priority. So there could be some kid from Oregon who was equal to the kid from Ohio, and they're going to take the kid from Ohio or whatever state, just because they wanted, I don't know if it was Midwest or Ohio specifically, because we're barely in the Midwest, but they had an institutional priority. So, you know, that makes sense. I have a question for you, because this is, you referenced test optional earlier. And I think this is one of the topics where the parents and the students, and even at the high school level, so you're leading a high school, they have a really hard time feeling like test optional is genuine. And I've seen some data from some schools where I go, yeah, for that school, I don't believe that that is a heartfelt word test optional. I think they're reluctantly test optional because they're peer institutions perhaps are. You know, I was talking to, I'm not going to name the school, but emailed with a school today and asked a question about test optional. And they said, oh, you know, we haven't renewed test optional beyond 2025, but I don't see us, you know, concluding that policy. I think it'll continue. And then she failed to mention, and I already knew, like, nursing's not even test optional at this school, but like their admission rep isn't sharing that. So some of the colleges are saying and doing some of the things that then causes families to doubt it about every college. So how do you interpret test optional these days?
So a couple of things on that. First of all, you always have to check the college's website for the latest information, but you also need to know what to look for. So to your point, there are many schools that are test optional. However, if you're applying to a more rigorous major, such as you mentioned nursing, engineering, you might have to apply with tests for the specific major. I believe it was Syracuse University when I interviewed them. That's one example where it came up in that conversation. So if a school reports saying that they're test optional, they are in fact test optional. A typical question that I ask my reps when I interview them is, so you say you're test optional. Can you share not only the percentage of students that supplied an application without test, but that were actually admitted that did not submit their test scores? And I will say for the vast majority of the schools that I interview that are in fact test optional, it's a 50-50 split. Now, a couple of things about that. I absolutely would always recommend take a practice SAT, take a practice ACT, prepare for the test. If you can afford a tutor, fantastic. If you could, you know, take a course, fantastic. Prepare, do the best that you can. Look at the mid 50%. If your test score represents who you are as a test taker, represents, helps your overall application in terms of who you are academically, submit that score. If it doesn't, and a school says it's test optional, then it's fine. Now, I'm not talking about the Dartmouths of the world, right, that went back to requiring it, and that's fine, you know, and they have their reasons. They basically feel that, look, it levels the playing field. We're getting applications from people all over the world, including, you know, in the United States and beyond. So that's a standardized test that helps us kind of level the playing field and see, you know, the differences between applicants academically. That's fine. You know, but if a school says that they're test optional, you have to believe them. And by the way, it's not taboo to ask the question, could you share what's the percentage of students that were admitted that didn't submit their test score? And I think that that's part of the problem, that people are afraid. They think, oh my God, if I ask that question, you know, my child is not going to be admitted. Not true. If that were true, I wouldn't have over 200 podcast episodes with admissions reps and so many more on the schedule ready to be recorded. The other thing I want to talk about is the mid 50% nowadays is obviously skewed, meaning that if you look at the mid 50% from, let's say, 10 years ago, where not too many schools were test optional, those numbers are probably lower than what they are today. Yeah. And that's because people just need to be mindful of the fact that the only people that are submitting test scores are obviously people that are performing extremely well. So if there's a particular school that you're looking at that says they're test optional, and they report that it's a 50-50 split in terms of the percentage that are in test optional or not, you have to believe it. And you have to be mindful of the fact that the numbers are skewed because, again, only the high scorers are submitting, which represents what that 50% is. So I think that if you understand all of this, and yes, you have to trust. Yes, you have to understand that there are things that you control in the process. And absolutely, there are those institutional priorities that you don't control. As you indicated, they might want certain people from certain states. I just looked at the website for Emory University, which I had Tim Fields from Emory on the podcast actually twice now.
That was a great episode, yeah.
He's awesome. I love Tim. I saw him at the conference recently, and he's just amazing. I absolutely, you know, he's not only a mentor, a teacher to me, but we've actually become friends. But if you look at the Emory website, there's actually a map of the United States, and it gives you the percentages from each corner of the country, if you will, in terms of the representative freshman class. And it's pretty evenly distributed. And so that's an indication that you're right. They look at having a freshman class that is diverse in terms of where they come from. You know, maybe they just were given money in a particular major. And so they're looking for, you know, more students in that particular major. Maybe, to be honest with you, they're looking for more students that could pay the full bill. Maybe they're looking for a lacrosse goalie. These are all examples of what an institutional priority can be. And they do change from year to year. And one of the frustrating parts of the college process is that we don't necessarily know school to school what those priorities are. You know, we have a good idea in terms of what their incoming freshman class, what the goal is, but that's really about it, right, from year to year. So I think that having conversations like this and, you know, just opening, shining, shedding a light on all of it will hopefully help people. It doesn't mean that it's going to be easy, but we're here to help.
Absolutely. So as we're wrapping up, you've done this as a dad for two daughters now. You are leading a high school for the last 14 years. So what parting words of advice do you have for families to lessen the stress? What would you leave them with after you've had all that experience and all these conversations with those that work at the colleges?
I think that's a great question. And I think I want to say that there are over 4,000 colleges and universities in the United States alone. Our country is rich with opportunities in terms of post-secondary education. There are many schools that are the right fit for every single student, but not every school is the right fit for you. So a couple of things on that. If there's a school that's consistently in the top 10 every year for the last four decades, but that school happens to be in a rural area and you want to be in a suburban area or an urban area, and you want to be within 2 hours of driving distance from your home, and that particular school happens to be a 5-hour plane ride from your home, that's not the right school for you. Yeah. So the rankings are great at selling magazines and things like that, but you really have to be mindful of what is the right fit for you. Not where a family member went, not where your best friend is going. What's the right fit for you? And I also want to say that if you're going to limit your list and apply to schools where, for example, their admissions rate is, let's say, 15% or less, right? And we know which schools they are. And I'm not saying not to apply to those schools. Those are great schools where you get great education. But if you're going to limit the schools that you're applying to where it's only 15% admit rate, it doesn't matter if you have a perfect GPA, if you have a perfect SAT or ACT score. It doesn't matter if you're the president, varsity soccer captain. Those schools are reach schools for everybody, for everybody. Because to your point earlier, and you know what we talked about, the first 30% at schools like that in particular that get rejected, their profiles are no different than the students that were admitted. I know of a student recently who got accepted to two amazing Ivy League schools, two of them, which so many people would, you know, wow, what an honor. But there was one school in particular that person wanted. And for whatever reason, she didn't get into that one. But the other two, she did. and she's doing fine, right? But the point being is, again, control what you can control, understanding that the application is a marketing package. Each piece has a point, very specific, and each of the pieces have to build on the next. And also, be mindful of 4,000 colleges and universities in our country alone. So try to enjoy it. Try to enjoy it.
Something for everyone.
There is. There's definitely something for everyone. And enjoy it. I remember visiting colleges with my daughters. It was fun. You know, we went on tours. I remember certain schools that my first daughter thought, oh, for sure, she wanted this school. And then she showed up there and it was not really what she wanted. So, you know, visiting is important. If you can't visit before applying, maybe it's because of finances. Maybe it's because of scheduling. You know, a lot of times it's hard to get a family schedule together, particularly if you want to visit colleges while they're in session. I think you owe it to yourself to try to visit at least once if before matriculating. So, yeah, in terms of stress, start early. Have the conversations about finances early with the family. And don't only apply to those schools where it's 15% or less. Make sure you have your reach schools, your target schools, your likely schools. Have a balanced list and enjoy it. Enjoy it. It's fun.
Well, I'm going to recommend that everybody listens to your podcast because, to your point, they're busy families. It costs money to do college visits. My now 26-year-old, he ended up attending someplace that we didn't apply until after he was accepted. Wow. But I agree with you. And that was just because we were busy and it was far away. So, but you got to get your feet on campus before you make that final decision. You know, I talked about that in an earlier podcast this year about how to make that final decision. And that was one of the pieces of advice. But start with John's podcast. Learn about the colleges. See if he's covered your college. You told me earlier you're always open to hearing, like, we want to hear from, you know, whatever school. So send him a message. He's responsive. And it's been a gift. And thank you, John. I so appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. And congratulations to you, Lisa. Honestly, you're doing such great work. I feel so blessed to be here today. Could not thank you enough. You're awesome.
Thank you. Thank you to John Durante for sharing his incredible insights from interviewing over 200 college admissions representatives. I hope our discussion has provided you with a deeper understanding of college admissions process and how to approach it with confidence. As we wrap up, I encourage you to listen as a family to at least one episode from John's podcast, College Admissions Process, featuring a college of interest to your team. I've linked to his show in the show notes. Take notes and have a family discussion about what you learn. Then use what you learn to guide your college-bound journey and the questions you'll ask during college visits. This will help you gain valuable insights and make informed decisions about the colleges on your teen's list. If today's episode was helpful to you, please share it with a friend who might benefit from it too. And don't forget to rate, review, and follow the podcast to help each one of our podcasts reach more families with valuable insights and support. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to PrepExpert.com to guarantee your child's success.